At every parent session, I'm asked, what is age-appropriate sex and sexuality information for my pre- and primary school age child? What level of information should I give them and what's appropriate for different ages and stages? Parents play a crucial role in ensuring the ongoing health, safety and well-being of our children in regard to sexual health and sexuality development, and that includes being children's main sexuality educator and source of reliable, accurate information. So over three podcasts, number 7, 8 and 9, I'll break down by age what is typically expected human sexuality development and behaviour for children, and I'll suggest some conversations you could, more importantly should, be having at those ages and stages. I recommend you listen to all three if you have primary school age children, but in this episode, I'll talk about ages 8 to 12 years. Welcome to Talking the Talk, Healthy Sexuality Conversations. I'm Vanessa Hamilton. This is the podcast that is going to encourage and support you to be the main sex and sexuality educator for your child. Do you want to feel confident and comfortable to have healthy and positive conversations about sex and sexuality with children so that you will be the first person who educates them about each topic? This podcast will provide you with surprisingly simple and effective actionable tips to clear the fears and uncertainty around essential sexuality conversations with kids. Each episode, I'll answer questions from parents and cover a variety of different topics. As a bonus, you might just get that sexuality education you missed out on when you were growing up. So as my tagline says, let's get started. It's easier than you think. Just a word of warning regarding the content. This podcast is not suitable for children. At times, it may contain explicit themes, including sexual themes, sexual abuse, and other adult conversations. Mostly, it'll be fun, informative, and insightful, but at the same time, please be sure to pause and take a breather or check in with your usual supports if any sensitive content brings up difficult thoughts or feelings for you. Welcome to episode 9. We'll be talking about the ages 9 to 12 years old and what is typical or usual development relevant behaviour regarding that age group and healthy sexuality conversations to have with that age group. But I do encourage anyone to listen to this. It's relevant for all parents. Parents, we need to be the main human sexuality educators for our children, and this needs to start early. And often fears about all things to do with sex often prevents parents from addressing even the most basic of sexuality, safety, well-being education for our kids, combined with the fact that most parents have had an inadequate sexuality education in their life, it becomes very problematic. Before we go on to talk about typically expected human sexuality development and behaviour in children aged 9 to 12, it's important to just have at the forefront of your mind that concept that when we're talking about human sexuality, we're not talking about sex. So sex is not for kids, but human sexuality is. And human sexuality and sexual development and education and conversations and information for our kids has hardly anything to do with sex, or what we commonly think of when we hear that word. So you can go back to a previous podcast where I talk about the difference between sex and sexuality, and you'll hear why I think sex is a really unhelpful word. And especially in this age group, 9 to 12, they're really attuned to hearing the word sex. So you have to describe to them what it means and how it means different things to different people and how it's an unhelpful word. And we need to ask people what they mean when they say it. So as far as how much information to give your kids, as always, I say to parents, ask yourself this question. Who do you want to be the main educator of your child? Who do you want to be the person that tells your child about each topic of human sexuality? You know, hopefully I'm hearing that you want that person to be you, to be the main source of information, reliable and accurate information for your child. And then you need to think about, well, how are you going to get in first to make sure that you are the first person that gives them that information and that they don't hear it from cousins and neighbours and older siblings or friends who have older siblings or media or society or YouTube or advertising or at this age group, importantly, pornography. You need to have had a conversation with your kids about all things sex and sexuality before our sexualised society gets in first, because they are getting a sex and sexuality education every day. It just may not be the one that we want them to get. So you need to be brave. If kids aren't getting the simple facts they need from us, they will get their sexuality education from somewhere else. And at this age, this 9 to 12, they may go exploring themselves if they don't have the answers. So for this age group and to support you to be your child's main source of information and education, I'm going to talk about sexuality, usual development and relevant behaviour or typical behaviour in 9 to 12 year olds. And then we're going to talk about some of the healthy sexuality conversations you can have. I'm going to focus on puberty towards the second half of the podcast and also talk about gender expected roles and stereotypes for young children, because that has a lot to do with respectful relationships, and that needs to really, really start early and around this age group. So as far as usual development that you can expect in humans aged 9 to 12, of course, the physical changes associated with puberty, psychological and social changes associated with puberty. They get an awareness of rights and responsibilities related to sexuality and relationships. And there's a development of media literacy skills starting there, learning to understand, interpret and evaluate media, sexuality, messages and images. And hopefully they're getting skills on how to critically analyse that sort of information that they're being fed all of the time. So as far as the behaviour that you could expect in 9 to 12 year olds, and if you know about this behaviour and know that it's typical, then that helps you be able to respond in a positive way. So it's well regarded that we know that relevant behaviour are these things, that there is the potential for them to have intimate encounters with peers such as kissing, hugging and holding hands. They may even go as far as having dating experiences such as boyfriends and girlfriends. Another typical behaviour in this age group is masturbating in private. In previous podcasts, the 0 to 8 year olds, I was talking about genital touching and how that's often related to self-soothing and pleasurable touch. But at those ages of 9 to 12 where puberty is starting, the touching of the genitals would probably become more what we would term masturbation, as it relates to feelings of attraction and sexual feelings in relation to that genital touching as well. So some children, there is a potential for preoccupation with sexuality, and a lot of that's to do with trying to get information because they have a vacuum in their brain that needs to be filled with information. Unfortunately, they're getting a lot of that from society, and so that's why school and home needs to be a greater source of accurate information. So they're trying to – so they'll do things like making reference to sexuality, increase use of language and jokes and exhibition behaviour, and that's exploring and testing boundaries and checking in with adults, and that's a way of learning and gathering information. They will also, along with that, show an interest in sexual references in media, and that is typical behaviour and part of their usual development. There'll be increasing requests for privacy, obviously, at around this age, and along with all of that comes mobile phone and social media use to connect and communicate with their peers. And that connection is really, really important for them at this stage. And so some of the healthy conversations that you need to have with your kids at this age and stage relates to relationships. Hopefully they've had good information already up to this point, but they do need to have a complete knowledge of the physical and psychological aspects of puberty and the body changes that are going to happen for them and the feelings. I'll go through that a little bit in a minute, but just to list some of the other conversations you need to have, you need to protect and prepare them for pornography and media sex. And so that's having lots of conversations. I'll do a separate podcast about that, but you want to be the first person that talks to them about the fact that internet pornography exists and what it is. I will put a blog post in the show notes that you can access to have a read about what conversations you need to have with kids about pornography. But please, please, please have conversations with your kids about pornography, and mainly that is not what sex is. It's not reality, and you need to give them countering information regarding all of the negative aspects that that visual messages are being fed to those children. You need to talk about the alternatives and what real positive, respectful relationships are about consent. And that goes along the lines of having lots and lots of conversations when you've been talking to your kids about how, when you've talked to them about sexual intercourse, for example, when you've talked to them about reproduction, and when you've talked about all those things that you said that, well, sex in that context is only for adult minds and bodies, and it's not for kids' minds and bodies, and it's never intended that children would see that sort of information on the internet. And in fact, lots of adults don't like looking at it because it doesn't make them feel good. And a lot of that, those pornographic images relate to it's a bit like watching a scary movie. It can stay in your mind, and then they're hard to unsee, and they can make you feel bad. And so we really need to try and avoid them, because once we see them, we can't unsee them. And you need to let me know if you have seen those images, and reassure them that you won't take their device off them, or you won't stop them playing their game. They have to know that they can come to you and tell you so that you can protect them. But as I said, that's only a brief snippet of what you should need to talk about pornography. Have a look on the blog post on my website, www.talkingthetalksexed.com.au. So having lots of conversations about respectful relationships, lots of teachable moments, positive conversations, just turn on commercial radio. There's lots of teachable moments there. Giving accurate facts and information before they hear it from their peers in society. Other conversations are about social interactions, calling out advertising themes, especially when it's sexualization of women and young people, self-esteem and empowering self-expression conversations, having discussions about guidelines for sharing images online, about how it's their decision if they share photos, but they have to understand the risks that come along with taking, storing and sharing of images. And broad and increasing conversations about sexual health, from everything from delaying first intercourse to contraception, safer sex and sexually transmitted infection prevention. And you start those conversations because they take many, many years to have the full comprehensive education provided to them, and it needs to start early. And research tells us that young people who have had this information throughout their schooling have much better outcomes later on in life, such as less sexually transmitted infections, less unintended teen pregnancies, they delay first sexual intercourse to a later age, they have much more pleasurable experiences and less regretful sexual and intimate experiences. So other things such as social skills and education related to rights and responsibilities in relationships, and lots of conversations about mutually satisfying interpersonal relationships, and teaching enthusiastic ongoing consent throughout your conversations. So just to touch on puberty, there's so much related to puberty, and hopefully there's, you know, we do an activity in for this age group that has about 40 different changes regarding puberty. And they get into groups and sort out all of the changes and decide what happens for everybody and what happens to physical females and what happens to physical males. And I'll just list some of them here. You can have a look on education curriculum resources. They're available on the internet about what children learn about puberty. Again, all of this needs to be put in a positive light. There's nothing negative about learning about the actual changes that are going to happen to their body. Actually naming those changes helps them celebrate and celebrate those changes and talk about them. So some of the things that happen to all bodies are things like their skin gets oily and their hair gets oily, so they need to start using shampoo and washing their face can help with acne. Voices change for physical males and physical females. And why I'm saying physical male and physical female is because I'm talking about biological bodies. Some people might not identify as male or female based on their physical body, so it might differ to their sex assigned at birth. So we do talk about physical bodies. So they get sweaty, their sweat gland develops, so that includes their feet, so they need to change their socks and wash under their arms. And talk about hair growing in all the places that it grows, on the face, you know, that includes physical females as well, grow hair on face, underarms, legs. Talk about the current trend in our society to remove body hair, but really it's their own personal choice, and that's in conjunction with their conversations about their sense of self and having their own choices about how their bodies are. And some of the things that happen to everybody, don't forget to talk about the feelings and those stronger feelings that start happening for them. So if we name them, they'll understand them. So starting to have sexual thoughts and feelings, their friendships become more important. They can have mood swings, they're wanting more independence, They should, you know, it's common for them to start feelings of wanting to be liked and fitting in. Whereas if you think about those younger kids, they don't really care about that as much. And being, for example, more concerned about their looks or their appearance, spending more time in front of the mirror in the bathroom. And it's typical and normal for them to not agree with their parents while they're wanting that more independence. And they'll start thinking about the future, and sometimes they might feel lonely and confused. And so when you continue on their body safety conversations about having five adults to talk to if they've got a problem, those are the adults they should be going to when they're having, you know, any concerns or feeling lonely or worried about puberty changes. And hopefully they've got adults in their life that they can talk to, either at home or their teachers at school, or the Kids Helpline as well is another good resource for them. So as far as having those conversations, I won't get into all the details about the physical changes. That's a whole other podcast in itself. But some of the things to mention for a physical female are the hips getting wider. And why would that happen? Because they have this amazing capacity to grow humans. So the hips get wider. Labia changes on the vulva on the outside. The skin grows and hair grows. Breasts develop. Everybody has nipples and breast tissue, but females grow larger breasts, and we talk about, well, why is that? Because they have the potential to feed a baby if they want to. And talking about the fact that they have reproductive capacity, and the female's special sac inside their body called the ovary has all of the eggs in it that the baby girl was born with, the baby physical female was born with, and the hormones start making those eggs wake up and being released. And one egg is released once a month. And just on the hormones, I forgot to talk about those five things about puberty. You know, when does it happen? Well, it can happen from 8 years old. That's less common, but, you know, it can happen to some people from that age. Some people don't start their puberty till about 16, which, again, is less common, but can happen. Most people start between 10, 11, 12, 13. And physical females will usually go through puberty before males. And what causes puberty? Well, there's a special body clock in their brain, in their pituitary gland, that turns on and releases a new set of hormones into their body. Hormones are good chemicals that flow into their body and make their reproductive organs grow and change. And those two main hormones are estrogen and testosterone, and people have different levels of those hormones. And it starts in different times in different people. So some people will start going through puberty well before their friends might go through puberty, and it takes a couple of years for all of the changes to happen. I'm oversimplifying all this, but this is just some of the conversations that you can have. So when those eggs start being released, because it's amazing, because physical female bodies get ready to create a baby every month. What a great reproductive design. But most of the time the egg isn't needed because there's no sperm there, and the lining has also been building up to grow a baby, and that happens every month. But most of the time there's no sperm there, so the egg and the lining need to come away from the body, and so they come out of the vagina, and that's like a bit of blood coming out, and that's called a period or menstruation, and you start having that conversation about that. And you can talk about the amazing stats that come along with that, like how many times will a physical female experience periods in their life, you know, 450 to 500 times in their life, and that does eventually stop, etc. And talking about vaginal discharge is really important, for especially with people with vaginas, but for everybody, to understand how human bodies reproduce. The vagina has its own cleaning mechanism, and when we're talking about the vagina, we are talking about the vaginal canal. So it's important that they know the difference between a vulva and a vagina. The vagina has its own cleaning mechanism, so discharge will start. And start having those conversations and normalizing all of the different discharges and changes that can happen in a female so they understand it. So, for example, another amazing part of human species design is that the vagina and the cervix will produce a clear fluid that's a bit like egg white, and that helps sperm swim up there. So it does everything it can to try and help create a pregnancy every month. And so some people know their egg is there and they're ovulating from being able to see that discharge. And see the difference in it that's there for about 24 or 48 hours. And then it's saying things like they might notice that some white discharge on their underwear, and often just getting this, the general conversations that once people start noticing hair growing around the vulva or their breast changing, that about within the 6 months or so they might be ready to expect to start that first period. I could talk for ages about more detail about those changes, but getting a book is a really good place to start, having a read of it yourself and making sure that your child has that. And so for physical males, some of the changes relate to their shoulders getting wider. So we talked about hips getting bigger in physical females and shoulders getting wider in physical males, because all children's bodies are quite straight, but after they go through puberty, those body shapes change a lot. And one of the reasons the shoulders get wider is to hold up that longer spine, because in general they'll have a longer spine. Talking about the penis and the testicles growing bigger, that physical males start producing sperm. Physical males weren't born with sperm. They start being produced during puberty, and 1,500 sperm are created every second, and how amazing that is. And the sperm live and mature in the testicles, and after about 3 months, if they're not used and don't come out, they just are absorbed by the body. And all the ways that the sperm can come out. So you can talk about erections happening, you can talk about ejaculation, and can talk about wet dreams. And on wet dreams, it's important to talk about the fact that wet dreams, one way of explaining it can be that part of puberty is having strong sexual thoughts and feelings. And in relation to that, the penis can become erect. The penis can become erect from lots of different reasons, just a physical reaction. But during puberty, it starts becoming related to feelings of attraction. And so it can happen more often. And sometimes it will even go as far as some semen leaking out of the penis. And it often can happen during the night when someone's having a sexual thought or a romantic dream. Now, just back to physical females, they also have the same amount of sexual thoughts or dreams or reactions. Obviously, they don't have a penis that becomes erect or a wet dream or ejaculate that comes out, but they can have vaginal lubrication as well, and the clitoris can become engorged with blood. So it's important to talk about equally that both types of bodies have responses to physical pleasure and feelings of attraction equally. That's not just males. In the past, we've always talked about puberty education of periods for females and wet dreams for males, and that's really, really problematic. Again, a whole nother podcast in that in itself. So that talking about equality, we're talking about pleasure as well. I have had a parent say to me once, well, you know, it's okay to talk about the mechanics of sexual intercourse, but why are we talking about pleasure to children? And I think, well, it's so important to incorporate pleasure into these conversations, because that helps with having positive relationships in the future. And pleasure is nothing to be ashamed of. It's something that they should correlate with intimate encounters always. You know, when I talk to university students, I say to them, raise the bar of your intimate encounters. They should be pleasurable. They shouldn't be regretful or painful or harmful. They should be pleasurable and mutually enjoyable. And these are the start of the conversations that you have when you're younger. When you're talking about two people doing something intimate together, they do it equally, they do it with consent, and they do it in a feel-good way. But these sort of activities, sexual activities, are for adults' minds and bodies only. And it takes a lot of years for bodies and minds to develop maturity enough to be able to engage in these activities. I digress to other. It's so complex. That's why we have to have lots and lots of conversations. So, and you can talk about the fact that sperm can actually come out as ejaculation, and I say that's when semen is created, and sperm get into the semen, and it all comes out on purpose. So the male can make that come out on purpose. That's one way that you can mention that. So that's just a little snippet of puberty conversations. Again, get a book and have a read about it is one of the best ways, and hopefully your school education incorporates all of those things for young people. And if you're so inclined, you can get the activity off curriculum resources and get the cards out and have a read of them, of all of the changes that can happen. So as far as talking about relationships and the fact that you're preparing them for intimate encounters later on in their life, and being respectful to other people, you need to be the main source of learning about gender and expected roles and stereotypes for your young children. And we know that traditional rigid gender stereotypes for males and females specifically are one of the main contributors to disrespect towards and violence against women. And these conversations need to start really early. The Australian Government Stop It at the Start campaign reminds us that not all disrespect results in violence, but all violence starts with disrespect. So we can address that disrespect at very early ages. And they're forming beliefs from the world around them, from what they hear, see and talk about. And if that message, all they're getting is from advertising and our sexualized society, that often reinforces rigid gender stereotypes and inequality, and that's really unhelpful. So typically before the age of two, even children are conscious of the sort of social relevance of gender and start to learn what's gender appropriate and gender role behaviour in our society. And, you know, even from that early age, they can become aware of gender stereotypes and they can identify their own gender by age two or three usually. And of course, I am talking about male and female here, not as so much all the aspects of gender diversity. Again, in another podcast, I'll cover that. But this is in respect to violence against women from males. Those deep-seated foundational conversations about respect need to happen from an early age. And this age of 9 to 12, when they might be exposed to pornography and to sexualized imagery on popular culture, sort of music videos and things, they get to have a growing understanding of some of the social meanings associated with this, the roles and stereotypes in our society. So it's important for us to have those conversations with them. So the Let's Stop It at the Start campaign from the Australian government has a really good checklist for parents to for you to think about what your child thinks about gender stereotypes and then what sort of conversations you need to have with them. So I do encourage people to do that checklist. It's www.respect.gov.au. I'll put a blog post in the show notes for you to access that. And it can be just about talking about toys, for example, and that anyone can play toys and reinforcing sport, for example. One example I use for kids when we're having puberty conversations at this age group, and we realize that generally physical males have greater muscle mass or stronger muscles or bigger muscles in general, we talk about, well, is muscle size and strength the only measure of strength? And at this age, they overwhelmingly say, no, of course not. There's all sorts of different measures of strength. There's intelligence and an emotional strength and resilience and determination. And I often use the AFL women's example. Here in Australia, AFL football now includes women, which is excellent. And we talk about the fact that if there was two people about to kick a football, one of them was an AFL women's player and one of them was an AFL men's player, if they've had the same opportunities in life, so encouraged to do AusKick from, you know, 4 years old, had coaching and support from their club and had the same opportunities and they both went to kick a goal, the physical male may probably kick the goal further because of their greater muscle mass. But as far as their skill and their determination and their resilience, etc., they would be equal. And they all, oh, yeah, that's right. And then they have a chat about that. So that's a really good example to talk about equality. So I do encourage you to look at the blog post that I've written about the cycle of violence against women starting with disrespect, because we need to counteract the messages that children are getting at a young age in our society. Another strong message that they're getting from society at around this age when they're looking at relationships and wondering what's normal in relationships is about their sexuality and their worth. So Gail Dines from Culture Reframed in the UK, which has great information for parents about pornography and how to talk to kids about it, that's Culture Reframed. Gail Dines talks about I'm about to swear, so there's a swear word warning coming up. She talks about how this around this age of 12, this idea of their worth is their sexuality, and this is the same time that we give them the phone, and that's when they start taking the photos with the pouted lips and the body poses, and then getting likes from their friends, and it's really, really complex. But we need to have lots of conversations about that. And she says that they get this message that if they don't have the look, if they don't look fuckable, they're invisible. You know, if they don't have the commodified look that our society expects, you know the look that costs a lot of money, that lots of companies are making lots of money out of. And if you don't look like that, as far as lips and hair and eyebrows and clothes and fake boobs and, you know, and it goes for the physical males as well, you know, the six pack and the big shoulders and the tans and all the things that money can be made out of and the commodified look. If you don't look like that, then you're invisible. So we need to counteract that message and really start that sense of self and sense of self-esteem at an early age. And parents are in the perfect position to do that. So parents often worry that if they have these conversations with their kids, that the kids might go and talk to other kids about it at school. But it's, you can say to your kids, well, it's not your job to teach other kids about this. This is that's their parents' job. But just make sure that you're an askable parent, that you're the key person, the touching stone that they can come home to and get information no matter what. And that takes a lot of resilience from parents sometimes. You do have to really, you know, take a deep breath and put that positive face on, even though you might be very worried on the inside about what does this mean, what are they saying, what are they going to ask me. But you need to come across as that askable person, the person that they can ask any question. And, you know, can saying things to your kids like, you know, no one ever talked to me about this when I was young, and I don't want that to happen for you. So just give me a couple of minutes, and I'll try and explain it the best way I can. Or, you know, I don't even know the answer to that, so I'm going to look it up and get back to you. Can I get back to you about that? So whatever you do, parents, don't do nothing. You need to have conversations with your kids. Just get started. It's never too late or too early to start conversations about sex and sexuality with your kids. Remember, you want to be the main person who teaches them, and to do that, you have to get in first with these conversations. So please go and have a look at the resources on my website. You might be interested in the membership coming up that's going to support people to be their main educators for their kids. And I hope that the conversations are going well in your household.